So welcome to this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Axis Communications. I am thrilled to be joined by Colin Cullerton. Now, as many of you will know, Colin recently retired from UK-based fashion retailer Next after a career in security, loss prevention and risk management, spanning an almost unbelievable 39 years and now working as an independent LP and risk consultant. Colin has recently worked as an outsourced LP management function, assisting several expanding retailers to create loss prevention policies and procedures. Colin was also crowned Retail Risk Loss Prevention Director of the Year. If memory serves, I think probably 2015, but Colin might remember that one. And it's fair to say Colin is very well known and respected in the industry, recognised as an expert in all areas of shrink and loss prevention. And I'm delighted that you've taken the time to join us today, Colin. So welcome.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for the invite. It's my pleasure.
Now, Colin, I have to go back, right back to the beginning, and we've got huge areas of your career to touch on, but how on earth did it all start? What was the intended career? Was it security and risk, or was there another thread pulling young Cullerton back in the days?
Absolutely not security and risk, that's for sure. So, yeah, it was like, millions of kids, it was to be a footballer. So I was, reasonably good. And so from 14 and a quarter to 16, I was training at a professional club. And despite the best efforts of my parents, look, this is not given, focus on your exams, etc. It became really difficult. But at just past 16, so I was 3 months from leaving school, I was released. The standard there at the time was too good. I got referred to a couple of others. I went to Southend, which wasn't easy for me to get to. So yeah, in the July, I left school in the July, and it shows how easy it would have been then. Paul, my dad simply said, right, I've got your apprenticeship at where I work. He worked for Schreiber Furniture, and believe it or not, I actually worked there for 3 and a bit years. I got a City and Guild in wood machinery or an equivalent, which if you were to ask, my wife still laughs about it now, because I'm absolutely useless in terms of DIY. But I did get my City and Guild. I went back to playing a decent standard of amateur football, probably about 18 or so. And then when I was 19, I was given the chance to go and play in Australia. The fact that I had a recognised trade allowed me to get my visa, and I went and played in Melbourne for a Dutch-backed team called Ringwood City. Fantastic experience, but I had to work part of my visa. I had to work full-time. And so at the end of the season, I took a break, travelled up to Queensland and the Gold Coast. Really a much better part of Australia. Melbourne was fantastic, but it felt a little bit like living in North London, if I'm honest. It was a very small football community. So I got a transfer to a team who had invested significantly in... It was run by a team of Italian tobacco farmers. They all wanted their 16 and 17 year olds to play at high standards. So they funded entry into the Queensland State League, which was a big step up for them. So they recruited about 4 or 5 people. I was one of them. Had an amazing year there. We weren't very successful, I think. But in terms of funding, Paul, we played 11 away games. 10 of them were in Brisbane, which is about 1,200 miles away, and one was a bit further up the coast, about 800 miles away. So it overstretched them. I came back. Part of my contract allowed me a flight home and back, and waited for a new contract, which didn't come. So I had to. I went back to working for a company I'd worked for, who did a lot of outdoor concerts. Nebworth, Reading Festivals, and I got a week's work in HMV in Oxford Street, looking after the very first Sony Walkman. So this was 19, late 1980. And yeah, they had an album on it, which people could listen to. And they were screwed on the wall. On the Thursday, I had a cup of tea with the head of security for the store. Well, actually, he was the head of security for the whole of HMV, but he was based at that store. He said, "What are you doing next week?" I said, "I'm really not sure." He said, "Well, I've got a vacancy for a security officer. Why don't you come and join us?" And I thought about it. And on the Friday morning, told him. And then in the afternoon on the Friday, three of the Sony Walkmans were stolen. And they were the only prototypes, they're the only ones in the country. So you can imagine the stick I got from what was going to be my new team. So, yeah, fell into it by complete accident. Fair to say, I absolutely didn't take it serious, certainly not for 3 or 4 years. Got a promotion in mid-80s. Then they opened the largest music store in the world at Oxford Circus, and that was fantastic. Challenge recruiting a great team. So, yeah, kind of, I can't say I didn't look back, but I was very, you know, very fortunate. Timing is very important. So I was in the business at a massive time of growth. I looked after the whole country for a while. Then had some experience with Japan and Canada, which was fantastic. So what seemed like it was 29 years seemed like exceptionally quick. But then the first time HMV went into administration, really concerned about my pension. So yeah, I gave nearly a year's notice, and so yeah, thought a lot about what to do. Didn't necessarily want to go and work for another retailer at that time, and had a few offers. I was quite close to joining Sys Republic, who I'd been part of an very successful implementation in HMV. And then I was persuaded by Jason Trigg, who had not long founded the Cardinal Group, probably a couple of years at that time. I really liked Jason's vision and his passion, and joined. Had the worst 6 months of my career for the first 6 months there, looking after a very technical. It was one of the very first crime and information sharing platforms. But
I hope that was a terrible 6 months with the project and not with Jason.
with the project, I should add. Yeah, yeah. And then I had 2 years looking after the outsourced LP services. Grew that. Had a great contract with Jack Wills for a year. Went in to see them, Paul, talk about the renewal, and they said they wanted to take it in house because they were due to open 12 stores in the US in that following year, and they made me a very good offer. And I have to say, Jason was fantastic. He could have stopped me joining Jack Wills. They were a client, but I joined them. I didn't think it would be my last job, but I did think it would last me about 5 years or so. And then I got approached, headhunted by Next, and resisted. And then in the end, the opportunity to go and work for a big retailer was just too much.
Yeah, and I have to say, I mean, your time at HMV and the, you know, Jack Wills and Next is legendary, if you like. I didn't realise there was an international footballing career at the start as well. So impressed. I'm actually nowhere near your standard, but I'm actually talking today with a snapped tendon and a double fracture in a couple of my fingers. I still play football myself. I've always played in goal, probably far too old to still be turning
I recall a fairly drunken evening discussing it with you, I think at the pre-Leicester.
So it's still all not quite right yet, but an amazing array of experience. I love the fact, again, whenever people have started as a security guard, seen it at the front line, epic start, if that's the right word, with the Sony Walkman incident. But it obviously didn't damage you too much as you went all the way through. And Next, I guess, you really came to the fore in the UK, such a big retailer, and some big changes and stuff that you managed to implement there as well.
Yeah, big shoes to fill. Alan Grocott was the previous head of security. Alan had worked with me and for me at HMV for a period, so I had a good good overview. I knew a lot of the team because at that time at Cardinal, I also ran the Wiglander Zuleski program for the Cardinal Group, and most of the Next team. Alan was quite visionary in that sense. He'd bought into Wicklander, and I think he was the very first UK retailer who introduced recording of interviews, which, from my point of view, it was an absolute game changer, because it raises the standards of the interviewer, it's significantly, when you know that disc's going to go to, you know, worst case, an employment tribunal, but certainly internal HR. So, yeah, it was good. But I have to say, even 6 months in, the scale and the complexity of Next still surprised me literally every day. I took a very determined or a very deliberate decision to get involved as much as I could. So I got myself invited onto, you know, meet different areas and strands and initiatives, because Next is constantly evolving. So I was sitting at the table where, you know, directors would say, what are you doing here? But I think the department had suffered a little bit from that in the years before. So, yeah, and the business had made it very clear what my initial priorities were, and that was predominantly around online fraud. Alison Parkinson was the grade two manager, you know, an absolute font of knowledge, and what's critical, you need to be within Next to be successful. You need to be credible against a really smart group of people, and Alison was certainly that. So yeah, I learned masses from her.
Yeah, I think a lot of people looking on, very impressive team the two of you made there for sure. Now, fast forward to today, you get to your desk in the morning. What on earth does your day look like? I know you help a number of retailers, you do some work with the vendor side, but what takes up the bulk of your time, and who's sucking that expertise into their organisations at the minute?
I try and stick to my original objective of only working 3 days a week. That's been a bit of a challenge in the last 8 weeks or so, which I'll expand on a little bit more. But I try and finish on a Thursday and then not do anything until the Tuesday morning. I did have a period when I retired of doing nothing, and it's not for me. Even to the point getting to a Friday evening and thinking, well, I don't think I'm not even looking forward to the weekend because I don't think I've earned it. It's quite a strange thing, but so that mix very much suits me. I worked a long notice period at Next, but certainly maybe not in the sense of the communication with the team, but with my director and the CEO. So it was almost 11 months. So I had a lot of time to plan. My big objective I wanted to secure public sector non-exec roles. I'd been very close to securing a position on the Gang Masters and Licensed Labour Abuse Board, but through a through completely unforeseen and a real tragedy, that didn't happen. And I have to say, I've subsequently applied for all my vetting was completed, which is a big part of the challenge. And I've subsequently applied for two or three roles. And there was, I have to say, and I am being critical, there was a Home Office appointment onto the SIA board. I'm fairly vocal about shortcomings that I see in legislation and training for security officers. And genuinely, when I read the advert, I thought it had been written for me. I didn't even get shortlisted. And if you look, most of those positions are already filled before they're advertised. So that's been a bit of frustration. The other objective for me was to work with best in class solution providers. Now you can say that's a very grand statement to make, but that was my objective. And I have to say, I've been successful in doing that.
Yeah, and so are you the solution providers? Are you then helping those solution providers with implementations into retailers? Are you spreading the message about those that you think have got a great offering? Where do you fit into that picture?
It's a real mix. So the the main contract I had from the outset was with OnView Retail, which is a subsidiary of OnCam. That was the most successful investment and certainly return a game-changing technology that I'd worked with in my last six years at Next. I thought the potential for the analytics, the combination of the Clickit platform, the knowledge that existed in OBR and the camera manufacturer was a fantastic opportunity that they weren't really maximizing. So my role was, the key role was to just make sure that they focused their efforts and investment on new analytics in the right area, not just because it's very easy for one customer just to say, wouldn't it be fantastic if you had an analytic that identified and alerted on slips and trips, and you could go away, and then by the time you go away, spend 9 months on that, and by the time you come back, the retailer's moved on or it's not a priority for them. So I really enjoyed that. I then became obsessed is a bit of a strong word, but I
obsessed is a good word in the right way.
Yeah, but I developed a real interest and curiosity around the potential for AI, machine learning, because the one thing having the opportunity to work across a broader range of retailers really showed me, Paul, that so much CCTV investment is currently being wasted. They're literally, you know, just dumb terminals that are great for retrospective review if you know what you want to look at. But and the first interest came because a retailer asked me, could I go and find a self-scan avoidance technology that worked and was cost-effective? Now that proved a challenge, and to some extent is still a bit of a challenge, and it's probably the one thing I get asked most about, but then I got introduced to automatic concealment detection, suspicious behavior detection technology, and I had a real skepticism about how effective it could be, and it's been a labor of love. It's been a long haul. The disappointment is that OnView. That's an analytic I would have loved to have taken to the business, but it didn't. It wasn't where they wanted to go at that time. And I went back to Jason, who is still someone who, yeah, invests in technology and innovation. And the great thing about Jason, nobody will challenge you more in terms of whether or not it's genuinely feasible. So that was exactly a year ago. And yeah, so I've been working a couple of days a week on that. I do some also do some mentoring to a few people. I'm a board advisor to 10 Intelligence, which is a due diligence investigations company. Great small company down in Kent. And I occasionally did yesterday actually in investigations for them, which is great for me, keeping my hand in and reminding myself why I love Wicklander Zaleski so much.
Yeah, so many people are just huge fans of that non-confrontational interview, isn't it? And then I'm just going to give a shout out. I think I'm right. Jason's at Amberstone these days for anybody who wants to dig him out and check in. Now, these technologies, is there any other big issues, topics or trends that you're seeing? Because you're involved, like you say, with the mentoring, the investigations, the vendor side. Is there anything else that you kind of see coming over the horizon or that, you know, you're sort of digging around in?
Yeah, I think in terms of positives, I think for COVID's been really good for lots of heads of LP. They've broadened their areas of expertise and their profile. Some have got seats at director level that they might not have otherwise have had. I think that's really good. The development, as I say, of AI and machine learning technology And particularly, as I say, in self-scan avoidance is absolutely the for our food retailers is the single biggest challenge for them at the moment. I think on the downside, I think there's a real obstacle to innovation and growth is that there's this real fear and inertia around cloud hosting, AI, machine learning, and sadly, I'm seeing too many people who just simply want to push that type of innovation into the too difficult to do pot. Mm. And it's really, it's frustrating because it's predominantly out of ignorance that their InfoSec, their privacy or their GDPR people just simply say to them, we're not going to be able to do that. And what I'm constantly doing is saying, well, look, just go back and challenge, understand exactly what their concerns are. Analytics on a CCTV platform is absolutely no different than any CCTV that might be covering public space, private space. It's the key thing is if you detect something that's suspicious, whether it's an employee theft, whether it's a theft, whether it's a push out, it's what you then do to marry that CCTV evidence and then try and match it to an individual. That's where the privacy and all the DPIA elements have to be followed. But literally so many retailers we talk to and they said, yeah, we run this past our InfoSec, and they say that we're not going to be able to do it. So if there was when I'm again talking to my ex-peers, it's just look, just go back in a balanced way and ask them exactly what the fear is, what are they trying, and learn more about the elements, because there's a wealth of material available.
Yeah, I think great question. You know, it's too easy sometimes, isn't it, for people just to say no because they can't be bothered to look at what appears at face value to be a difficult solution. Now, I want to come on and ask you in a moment about internal theft, your take on it, and also I've got some other questions. But before we do that, we're just going to take a brief break and hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
These days, surveillance cameras aren't just for monitoring a specific area, because with analytics, those cameras can do so much more. Like with any new development, there has been some hype, some disappointments, and lots of new options for the collection and use of data. Axis enables a smarter and safer world by creating network solutions that provide insights for improving security and new ways of doing business. For more information about Axis, please visit our website, www.axis.com.
So welcome back to this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Axis Communications. I am, of course, still joined by Colin Cullerton. Now, Colin, just before the break there, I alluded to the fact I wanted to come on to internal theft as a topic. But before I do, I'm just going to ask you a question. Is there a kind of, you know, all of your experience, a favorite piece of risk or LP technology that you always go to that you think is the base of the discipline, your sort of preferred avenue, if you like?
Great question, Paul. Probably the biggest disappointment I had over my time at Next, which was fantastically rewarding, and if I lived in Leicester, I'd like to think I'd still be there. But the kind of biggest frustration, the one piece of what I consider to be the absolute essential toolkit for an LP professional or function, is point of sale exception monitoring, data mining. And because Next went through, Next hosts its own till systems. It doesn't have, it literally builds all of its own. And I'd been with the business about 10 months, coming up a year, when they decided they were going to do a complete hardware update, all the tills to move to more intuitive functionality, and completely rebuild the back end till system, EPOS system. That took quite a bit longer, so to the point where I'd say the complete rollout of the new tech with all its new functionality probably only happened 9-10 months. But I had I had 4 years working for the absolute smartest man I've ever worked with or for. And he, again, like directors, he had to work a long notice. So he said, right, I've got a year here. What's the one wish that you'd like me, before he went in August 2018? What's the one wish you'd like? And I said, yeah, help me deliver a point of sale exception monitoring. So we went through the whole beauty show. We narrowed it. We narrowed it down to a couple of companies, and then one preferred supplier. But regretfully, as we were progressing to finalising the scope of the proof of concept, they got acquired and kind of it was Profitech at the time, and they got acquired and then were incorporated into Zebra Technology. Still, fantastic technology. And I have to say, if there's one thing that I would, if I could go in and I had a wish list and I went into a new business and they didn't, that would be the one thing. Because I think if you can get a really accurate picture of the potential fraud at point of sale, it's just a massively good starting point. Because for years, for all of my 40 years in the industry, every second year a new survey comes out and it says internal theft is this percentage, external theft and process loss. The fact is, everybody is guessing. No, if you absolutely know that, you have cracked it. And if anybody genuinely believes that they really know it, because all too often people just take one investigation over a half year maybe and say, look, yeah, the potential for this, it was online fraud and its potential was 2 million and we'll extrapolate it. Our total loss was 10 million. So we've got a 20% problem. And it's not scientific. But what I do really believe in firmly in the industry is that we have a massively talented group of people heading up the top 25 UK retailers, for example. And I would, almost without exception, I would say, give them the correct data, tell them when their losses are occurring, and they've got the ability and skills and hopefully the ability to get budget. Mm. They've got the ability to skills to focus the efforts in the right area, but they've got to have that data. Yeah. So the other absolutely critical thing for me is RFID or anything that's going to give you inventory accuracy, stock file accuracy. Because if you don't, particularly with the growth in omnichannel, if you don't have that, you're kind of guessing.
And amazing. And I'm just blown away. Great to hear you call it out. And I guess now you've left Next, but that opportunity that was missed there to get that tech into Next is pretty huge. So thanks for sharing that.
All is not lost.
Yeah, all is not. And two amazing bits of tech. I guess they're the number one and the number two go-to, isn't it? If people don't have that as a retailer, just get those two in. I guess are they your top tips?
Yeah, absolutely. And RFID can come in different forms. Next were industry leading, because they introduced UID back in 2010, 2011, which gives every single clothing product and a range of other products an absolute unique identifier. And that delivered over £1 million a year in refund fraud reduction for Next. And that was going, but the downside to that, Paul, is that it was still on a swing ticket or a care label. So it still needed individually scanning. So introducing RFID through the hard tag, which then creates a three-way association for Next, was again an absolute game changer. You can perpetual counts, and then the absolutely utopia for that, and there will be retailers, I think the US is probably leading on this, is actually having doing away with the need to do any scanning. So having overhead RFID readers or readers on the fitting rooms that's constantly giving you a picture of your stock. showing, and you can imagine how powerful that is.
Yeah, amazing transformation. Now, you touched on internal theft there as well, and it's something I often go on about. So you're out of the pressure cooker of having the paycheck from the retailer every month. What's your take? I always feel it's a little bit of a taboo subject. Retailers often don't want to talk about it because, in effect, you're calling out your own employees for being part of the problem. Often it's suggested 50% of all losses can come from internal theft. But what's your take on it? Your experiences, you've been in a whole raft of retailers, large and small, and you still get involved now. But how big is the problem? What was your take on it?
I think the most challenging thing is still the unknown. Yeah. You know, literally people, or I say, retailers and functions, LP heads of, really just knowing what the scale of the problem is probably the worst from a, particularly from a warehouse and distribution point of view, is probably the single most challenging legacy of COVID, where, just basic good practice with regards to egress, exit, searching people, moving around, fire exit doors being left permanently open. I sadly have visited retailers in the last 6 months where staff searching hasn't been reintroduced, and these retailers are facing a real challenge getting that introduced. And the other big issue is that vetting of new employees in-house and through agencies has been relaxed significantly, to the point I think it's almost non-existent in a lot of businesses. And these employees will do their research in terms of what practices are in place in businesses, and let's face it, where new warehouse operatives are being enticed with £1,500 joining bonuses at the moment. They've been given big healthy pay rises, refer a friend bonuses. So they can choose. And if they'll go into somewhere that it's very easy to steal, and let's face it, the worst type of employee is someone who's coming in with the intention of stealing from you, let alone those that are tempted by the product and the ease, because it's not difficult. So I think there's a big chance that I would, just looking at marketplace, eBay stores, etc., you have to think that staff theft of product is at its absolute worst. That's my gut feel. I don't have a science behind that, but that's my gut feel. On the upside, the significant reduction in cash in the business will hopefully reduce that, but thieves are very creative. They will find new ways of stealing, whether it's credit card refunds, whatever that might be.
Yeah, and I think you're right there. It's known almost, and I'm sure people who do set out to steal knows which retailers have. They'll go, I wasn't vetted. I put in a CV that was fictitious and I got hired. All that information's out there. So as a retailer, I think it's just getting worse and worse, isn't it? Because, the bad guys and girls will be sharing that information.
Yeah, the best technology investment that we made in warehouse and distribution was through vision, say, screening technology. Apart from being exceptionally effective, it reduces that contact, it reduces the risk of conflict. Absolute game changer. And I'm certainly pleased to see that we had quite a big battle. We were fortunate Steve Teatum had been in the business long enough to understand the challenge, and he did a fantastic job getting that investment approved.
Yeah, good, great bit of kit. And I think they still go from strength to strength, that vendor. And I think that sort of the only main player in town as well. And they're still innovating. So, yeah, a lot of people speak highly of the tech.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Colin, final question for you. We are, there's lots of talk about back to normal, but how do you see, you know, let's go broad, how do you see the future in terms of the high street? Have you got any thoughts on where that's going to go, but particularly maybe around risk and LP? You know, are you looking forward to leaving it all behind? You get excited about what's on the horizon. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't look forward to leaving it all behind, because I have to say I do struggle, I do have a passion for the subject. In terms of concern, I think there's not enough collective effort to reduce verbal and physical violence against retail staff. I don't see that improving without a significant push. I heard a great presentation at the National Business Crime Solution Conf Members Day last week from Paul Gerard from the Co-op. Passionate, informed, doing it for the right reasons. But yeah, there aren't enough following his lead. So the Home Office are playing at it, sadly. You know, I miss not being a member of the Retail Crime Steering Group, because that had the opportunity to, and some of my ex-peers are still doing great work on there, but things just seem to take forever to change. And I think the high street's a very easy place for thieves to steal at the moment, because from security officers, store detectives, to sales staff, it's exceptionally hands-off. Minimum chance small chance of being caught, which is why, apologies for the plug, but which is why I love the potential for the Vision concealment or suspicious behaviour detection analytic. It really does sweat that CCTV investment, but it's easy. And I'm seeing it from the alerts that we get. I'm seeing it every day in a variety of stores. So that worries me. There doesn't seem to be collective effort. Apologies if I am incorrect on this, but I'm not necessarily seeing the other big players stepping up and doing and supporting the co-op. But I do apologise if I'm wrong, but it doesn't feel like that. So, you know, decriminalisation of shop theft is still occurring. The £200 guidelines are still followed strictly by a lot of retailers. So that's a concern. The other thing is the downside, for me, the downside to some of these heads of LPs getting a broader, working across a broader risk disciplines and health and safety, for example, is that some of them are spreading themselves too thin. And they're not quite sure whether their business focus or their function focus should be on malicious or non-malicious theft. And I get an inkling, well, I'm seeing it, firm evidence that some are doing a little bit in both areas and not really sure what the returns they're getting on. So, you know, fundamentally, this is why I come back to RFID, point of sale exception monitoring solutions. You've got to have the good data to work on. You can't rely on arrest data, for example, to say to you that, yeah, we've got a significant problem in this product category. So it's not going to be, it's absolutely not going to be easy. The other thing that has not always been paramount for me, but I am leaning more and more towards it now, I think the need for a recognised qualification that recognizes the modern LP professional now is needed more and more, because I think I alluded to a talk at Retail Risk Leicester a couple of years ago, Paul, that one of the challenges for my ex-peers is that very few of them will report to someone who's done their job and really understands their job. And across, if you've got an MD of a business, you'll have a finance director, you'll have a marketing director, and their deputies will all probably have followed a similar path to them, similar degree. Whereas if you take the top 20 heads of LP in UK retail now, you'd see an absolute diverse range of backgrounds and how people have come to it. So I think it's really time for it would be a great time to have a recognised qualification that respects all of the challenges that a modern LP professional has to look after, but also reflect, get some element of a privacy, an InfoSec knowledge within there. Not formal, not to the level that the directors and heads of in their business know, but to have a much better understanding than they have at the moment.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually. You're quite right. All of those other senior functions would have a recognised qualification. And I remember that presentation and a whole room of people nodding in agreement, but I don't think anything's happened on that. And I will just call out Boots have been right alongside the co-op doing some amazing stuff around looking after their staff and their shop workers, just because I think they're the two stand out, and I think they need a thumbs up as well. But you're right, the others need to step up as well. So it's kind of missing broad brush.
Iona and team, my apologies.
So,
a real oversight,
But they are really only.
No, I've had the pleasure of doing some work with Iona and her team in the last 2 years. So it's absolute. And the good thing is that there's such a real clarity of objective within that. Everyone in retail knows what their priority is.
So great to see. Colin, absolutely fantastic talking to you today. A huge wealth of insights and thoughts. And I really appreciate you sort of jumping around and fielding thoughts and questions. So thank you very much indeed for being my guest this week.
No problem, Paul. Paul, can I just as a final note,
of course.
Thank you for your congratulations on your marathon achievement. Fantastic charity. I think, as you know, I lost my mum early October this year to pancreatic cancer. So, very, very close to my heart.
Yeah, I think you probably saw it. A very dear friend of mine. She was given a 1% survival chance, and she's recently celebrated her 10-year all clear. But she is absolutely in the minority. So, thank you for that. And I'm actually just teeing up my entry to the London Marathon next year for the same charity as well. So thank you for the opportunity to plug that and the shout out there, Colin.
You're very welcome. Yeah, because I'm just looking at some fundraising, but on a bike rather than on foot for next year. But congratulations.
All right, Colin, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. And
you're
really
very welcome, Paul. Thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Colin.
Thanks a lot. Bye.